What do you mean I'm a witch?
You're a witch.
Now, you're not alone. I'm a witch, Hilda's a witch, your father's a witch.
And I suppose my mom's a witch, too.
I always thought so.
That is from the premiere episode of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, a primetime hit show created in the 1990s by Nell Scovell. Even if you've never heard of Nell, you have almost certainly seen her work. She has written for everything from The Simpsons to Late Night with David Letterman to Newhart to Murphy Brown to Monk. She also co-wrote Sheryl Sandberg's 2013 best-selling book, Lean In. Now, Nell has just published her own book, her first, a memoir called Just the Funny Parts, which is a candid and funny portrayal of her 30-year career in a very male-dominated part of show business. But before she broke into show business, into TV, Nell got her start as a professional funny person in 1986 at a magazine, which I had just co-founded.
We met at Spy Magazine, where I was hired as the first reporter.
And you were like 25, I'm thinking?
That's right.
I think you say in the book that you got hired because you came in with a bunch of story ideas. Is that right?
I did, including Too Rich and Too Thin.
Yeah.
Which...
One of your most famous stories.
It was, and one which, if you recall, you said could not be reported because women wouldn't talk about their weights. And I was like, no, these women will.
Yeah, and no, and you were clearly right. I still love it. I still love the way it looks. Designed, by the way, by this person who designed your cover,
Alexander Isley,
of your book. Can you read the first line of this piece, which I've brought with me?
Sure. In New York, there is an inverse relationship between a woman's dress size and the size of her apartment. A size 2 gets a 14-room apartment. A size 14 gets a 2-room apartment.
Which is a brilliant aphorism. I mean, you know, Oscar Wilde, Dorothy Parker. It's great. Was that a joke you had and you were just waiting for the right moment to stick it somewhere?
Well, the Duchess of Windsor famously had a pillow on her sofa that said, you can never be too rich or too thin. And among high society, it was considered ultra chic to be the smallest size possible. I remember Caroline Roan would treat herself to one Oreo cookie a night.
And she was a rich Manhattan lady of that era.
Yeah. And I just thought people overdid it.
And you, this was a reported story. It wasn't just saying, hey, look at all these skinny rich women. You went out and talked to people about thinness and wealth.
I did. And it was at a time where you could pick up the phone and call someone at their home and they would pick up. It was before publicists ruined reporting.
Right.
I also sounded really young, and to this day, I'm convinced.
You were really young.
I was, but also I got Ed Schlossberg on the phone, who was Caroline Kennedy's husband and would famously not speak to any reporters. And I'm convinced it's because he thought I was a high school student.
Yeah.
My biggest regret, though, was when I was reporting a story on gold diggers. I think it was your story idea. And I had put in a call to Pamela Harriman. Remember, Pamela Churchill, Avril Harriman.
Right.
And I went out to get a cup of coffee, and I came back, and Lisa Lampanelli, who was our...
The future famous comedian who was a fact checker at Spy Magazine.
Yeah, I think handed me a pink while you were out slip that she had tried to call me, and I called back, and she was on a plane back to Paris. So I missed that phone call.
So you left Spy to start writing for television.
No, I went to Vanity Fair first.
Oh, right. There
was Remember, and Graydon told me I was making the biggest mistake of my life.
Right. And this is some years before he became editor of Vanity
Fair.
Yeah,
just a couple. Life we had a good laugh about that in his office.
But then you went to television.
I did.
How did that happen?
So I bump into Joanne Gruber.
Who was our manager, or our chief copy editor and then our managing editor at Spy.
Right. Yeah. And she kind of pauses and then says to me, Nell, I don't mean this as an insult, but I think you could write for television. And it truly was the first time I'd
really?
Ever considered it.
So once our colleague said, you know, you should go write for television, you said, well, by golly, I will, and what?
I knew one person in the business. And really, if you know one person, you can find a way in, which is why Twitter's so great. Like, if you can just find that person. And I said, what do you do? And he said, well, you write a spec script. And he introduced me to an agent who liked my spy pieces and said, I'll represent you based on those. And I sat down and wrote a spec script.
And then that got you a job?
You know, trying something new really should be the easiest thing in the world, because if you try it and it works out great, that's wonderful. And if you try it and you fail, you just go, well, I've never done that before.
Right.
So what was weird was I write this spec script. My agent sends it into It's Gary Shandling's show, and they buy it.
Huh.
So it's like getting a home run at your first at-bat as a rookie.
So this is the prototype of modern cool TV.
It was, yeah. And very absurdist. The most popular show at the time was The Cosby Show, and if I'd been smart, I would have written a spec script for them.
Yeah, and you would have had a better first chapter for this particular book, probably. You wrote for The Simpsons, right?
I did. I wrote the episode where Homer eats blowfish and thinks he's going to die.
Right. This is 1991, which is really early in the existence of The Simpsons.
It's second season. And I called after watching the very first episode and said, I want to work on this show.
In 89.
Yeah. And I don't think they were getting a lot of calls at that time, because it was just this weird-ass cartoon.
On this weird little network that wasn't really a network, Fox.
Oh, it was so mean. I loved it.
Yeah. And this came from what? Going to sushi restaurants or eating blowfish or what?
I've never tried blowfish. It came from, I think, wanting to know more about the character, because it was so early in the show.
Right.
And the idea is, well, if someone's about to die, you really do find out what's important to them.
Let's play a clip from the episode, your episode, One Fish, Two Fish, Blowfish, Bluefish.
Now, a little death anxiety is normal. You can expect to go through 5 stages. The first is denial.
No way, because I'm not dying.
Second is anger.
Why, you little...
After that comes fear.
What's after fear? What's after fear?
Bargaining.
Doc, you gotta get me out of this. I'll make it worth your while.
And finally, acceptance.
Well, we all gotta go sometime.
Mr. Simpson, your progress astounds me.
So smart to turn the Kubler-Ross thing into like a long comedy bit.
The Simpsons room was so deep in talent, and I think that run came right out of the room with George Myers and Al Jean and Mike Reese pitching in.
Yeah.
TV writing is best, I think, is when it's writing as a team sport, and you really use the best of what everyone has to offer. So I did come in with the idea of the blowfish, and then we batted around some big ideas of where it could lead. You know, Homer makes his vow at the end to live life to its fullest.
I'm alive, and I couldn't be happier. From this day forward, I vow to live life to its fullest.
And then he's sitting on the couch watching bowling and eating pork rinds.
Which is, I am told, among Simpsons fans, considered one of the great endings of all 600-odd Simpsons episodes.
The best sitcoms, I think, are when they enlighten our own lives.
And lots of those people that you worked with are still writing Simpsons episodes. Why'd you leave?
Well, I was a freelancer, and...
And they didn't want girls? What?
They didn't.
Yeah?
Sam Simon was going through a bad divorce at the time and told someone that he would prefer not to have a woman in the room. They didn't have another woman write an episode for 5 more seasons.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. You were, in those early years, usually the only woman, it sounds like, from reading this book.
I was in Newhart and Coach and Letterman, Simpsons.
Well, once you were a successful TV writer in El Scovel, was it easier, though, to be that Rosemarie character from Dick Van Dyke? I mean,
well, Dick, think about it. They only had 3 writers, so they had 33% women. That
yeah.
was far better yeah. than any room. It was incredible when I got to Murphy Brown. And there were 4 women and I think 6 men in that room. And not having the additional burden of having to represent all women was wonderful.
Yeah. So jumping ahead to your non-television second act or third act or whatever it is, 2011, you get a new writing partner in Sheryl Sandberg, the chief operating officer of that company, Facebook. How did that collaboration begin?
She was about to give a speech at Annapolis. And
you mean the Naval Academy?
The Naval Academy. It's called the Forrestal Lecture. And she asked me to take a look at what she had written. And it was the first time she actually used the phrase lean in.
And that was her phrase or your phrase?
Her phrase.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah. Have you talked to her recently about, you know, why Facebook hates America?
No.
No?
No, we don't get into that.
Well, that'll be the second sequel, I guess, right? Like, lean in. What was the second one called?
Oh, Option B.
Option B.
Although I just wanted, my joke is if I had written Lean In alone, it would have been called Barge In.
Yeah.
And nobody would have read it.
And the third one will be Get Out or something. I don't know.
Quick. Get out.
A couple of years after that, you were writing some jokes for the White House Correspondents' Dinner in Washington. And
it's through Facebook that I meet Jon Favreau, who is the head speechwriter for Barack Obama. And he invites me to contribute jokes to the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And then I did that for 5 years.
Well, we have one of them from 2011 when the president was Barack Obama and he did his funny routine, including this joke.
I've even let down my key core constituency, movie stars. Just the other day, Matt Damon. I love Matt Damon. Love the guy. Matt Damon said he was disappointed in my performance. Well, Matt, I just saw the Adjustment Bureau, so right back at you, buddy.
And that one was a nail biter because I'd written it and John really liked it and it was in the script. And then the morning of the speech, John wrote me and said, the president has cold feet. He's worried he might offend Matt. And I wrote back, I saw the Adjustment Bureau. Truth is a defense.
Your work as an Obama comedy minion is just one chapter of Just the Funny Parts. So what is the overall response you want from readers after they've read the whole book?
I would hope laugh. I think, you know, I called it Just the Funny Parts instead of Just the Angry and Bitter Parts.
Right.
I hope it's like equal parts about comedy, about writing, about feminism. And I think it's pretty eye-opening for men. I do really want men to read the book. And I always say, come for the Simpsons, stay for the feminism.
Nell Scovell, thank you very much. This was just a pleasure, as is your book.
Oh, well, thank you for teaching me how to write, Kurt.
Nell Scovell's book, Just the Funny Parts, is out now.